And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is just turning 4 minutes past nine on this Thursday. It's the 19th of September. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed across the northwest of Ireland and across the world, wherever you may happen to be listening to us. And it's glorious here across the northwest for a change. We got our Indian summer in the end. If you want to get involved in the conversation, trigger your own topics, please get in touch with us. The WhatsApp and text number is 086 60 25000. If you're listening outside the Republic, 00353 8660 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000 and emails to comments at highlandradio.com. And there is some ongoing essential maintenance taking place on our transmitter system, so hopefully not too regularly, but it's possible throughout the course of the day. There could be some FM interruption, but that does not interfere with listening to us online, your smart speaker and what have you. But just in case the station does get lost for short periods of time, it's just due to essential maintenance, because of course there's a network of aerials that gets the station in and around the northwest. But as I say, unaffected online or on your smart speaker, but don't be alarmed, if you would be alarmed, if you lose us on FM. But it's all about making the signal even better going forward. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning, with only 14 of the country's farmers appealing their new zoned land tax decisions, many others say they were forced to employ consultants and legal opinion in their fight to avoid being chased as eligible for the tax, and they are now calling on the government to pay their costs. The chair of the IFA, Donegal Joe Sweeney, said the latest land tax proposal was a crazy idea in the first instance and it was never going to work. Farmers who opposed the land tax claim it failed because it left them exposed to a levy they could not afford in the current climate of their industry, and they were forced to fight it tooth and nail. The IFA says that at the current rate of 3%, the new tax amounts to €885 per year on the average hectare of farmland. That is twice the return from farming, and increased input costs and legislation have combined to create a highly negative environment. On to the Donegal News now, and residents in the Ballyrane area of Letterkenny are pleading with Donegal County Council to rethink their decision to chop down a 90-year-old oak tree to make way for a new cycle path. So we're getting rid of a tree to create a cycle path. Okay, interesting. Work recently commenced on the new Greenway cycle path, which is part of the Letterkenny Active Travel project. The tree, located between the entrances to Ballyrane Park and Orchard Grove, is due to be removed to make way for the new cycle path. The plans haven't gone down well with some local residents, with members of the Antoshka Donegal Local Association. They've also highlighted their concerns. One resident said the council's plans smack of hypocrisy. Another resident, Dorothy Toy, put her concerns into a poem she wrote, which has since been taped to the tree. So we've seen this kind of stuff before. Are we going to, in 10, 15 or 20 years, look back at pictures of this tree and say, who made that decision to chop that down for this cycle path? Surely the infrastructure can find another way, can it? It doesn't make sense to chop a tree down, but I don't know the ins and outs of it, so it probably makes or could make perfect sense. I don't know. If you view on that, if you have a view on that, let us know. 086 60 25000. The front of the Derry News is a picture, new chapter for Derry, and it is a picture of people talking of the new chapter. £300 million funding package for Derry and Strabane finally signed off. Let's go to the Nationals and another poll out today, another opinion poll, which kind of underlines once again Sinn Féin's astonishing drop from the high 30s. They're now down at 20% party support at the moment. Support for Fine Gael has increased, according to the latest Irish Times Ipsos opinion poll, with approval ratings for Taoiseach Simon Harris surging since the last poll in early summer. Support for Sinn Féin has fallen since the last poll, while the personal rating for party leader Marilyn McDonald also declined sharply. Sinn Féin at 20, minus 3. Fianna Fáil at 19, minus 1. Fine Gael, 27, plus 4. Interesting that, well, what does it all mean? This is completely apolitical in this. I mean, what I think is going to happen is that, I think what's going to happen is that Sinn Féin are going to run more candidates than they did the last time. I don't think they're going to do very well. And after the election, I believe then they won't get into government and Marilyn McDonald will step down and someone else will step up. That's probably what I feel is going to happen. Whether it should or shouldn't happen, that's not my point. It's just the current political landscape. And I think part of it, and if Sinn Féin would say to me, Greg, what do you think is going on here? The party's stance on certain issues, be it immigration or indeed that referendum, I think the damage was done in terms of how those issues were handled and other things as well. And unfortunately for Mary Lou McDonald, I think unfortunately she is the face of that. And I think they're going to struggle to, re-engage with the voters whilst they still have the same faces associated with those policies that may have damaged their standing. That would just be my opinion if I was asked independently to see what's, you know, not that I ever would be, but just so I think that that's a problem. And I think really they're only going to perhaps maybe, and I could be wrong here, start to address and fix some of those issues post general election. But we shall see. And as I say, that's not a political comment in terms of one party or another. It's just an observation. And I could very much be wrong. The results of this poll are likely to intensify pressure on Mr. Harris to call an election after the budget. He and other coalition party leaders have repeatedly insisted they intend to wait until next February or March to hold the election, though there is a widespread belief across political circles that an election in November is likely. The state of parties when undecided voters and those unlikely to vote are excluded is as follows. Fine Gael 27%, Sinn Féin 20%, they're down 3, Fianna Fáil 19%, down 1. Among the smaller parties, the Green Party is at 5%, Labour at 6%, the Social Democrats at 4%, Solidarity People Before Profit at 2%, AIM 2%, they're at 1%. Independents are on 16%, that's down 1%. So what do you think? How do you think it'll all play out? Let us know what your views are. 086 60 25,000. The Independent reports that working asylum seekers could be asked to make contributions of up to €238 a week to pay for state accommodation and services under measures being considered by the government. People seeking international protection who gain employment but are still housed by the state could also be charged for Wi-Fi, food and other services as part of a new government plan to secure financial contributions from asylum seekers. A senior group of officials prepared a report for the coalition on a range of options. The group said it would take between 1 and 2 years to introduce a contribution system because new technology and protocols could be required. So again, if you talk about what that could look like politically, if you were to analyse it, it could look like a very favourable move. Some might feel it is, but obviously it's pushed back 1 or 2 years. So you might get the lift from it, but you don't have to implement it. The Irish Daily Mail this morning, this is a story that's going to annoy a lot of people. There are two sides to all stories. There's probably three, and the truth in there somewhere. The finance minister has been forced to defend a tax break for gold-plated pensions for those on six-figure salaries and with more than €2 million in their pension pot. Now, this might seem crazy. You know, the richest in society. Can you imagine having a pension? Can you ever imagine ever accumulating millions of euro or hundreds of thousands of euro? But this is about pensions. So this is millions of euro in pensions. And there's tax breaks being defended on that. Gold-plated pensions, they're called. Jack Chambers insisted that the move is needed to fill senior positions left vacant across the civil service, such as the role of Deputy Garda Commissioner, which has been unfilled for more than a year. The minister confirmed that the threshold at which people with large pensions would pay a chargeable excess tax would rise from 2 million to 2.8 million by 2029. So the argument is that there are some high-powered jobs in the civil service, not least the Garda position there, and that to compete for the best people against the private sector and internationally, you have to make these kind of financial concessions. So do you agree or disagree with that? The flip side of that is if you're working in retail today or in radio for that matter at local level or in a factory somewhere, your tax take really is being used either directly or indirectly to make these gold plate pensions sustainable, which is a hard pill for people to swallow, even if the argument is made that this is about keeping getting the right people into the right jobs. If you've a view on that, you know the numbers. Irish Farmers Journal this morning, payments of 18.4 million under the Areas of Natural Constraint scheme have started to issue to farmers. A total of 87,149 farmers in the scheme will receive an 85% advance payment from this week, with the 15% balance payments to follow in early December. So if that's relevant to you, I presume it is good news. This tragic but remarkable story of Israel detonating pagers has moved on. Because as people were gathering to mourn their dead or bury their dead yesterday, those that were killed by these exploding pagers, walkie-talkies started to explode. These were walkie-talkies that were bought at the same time as the pagers, and they were sent a signal that that triggered an explosion of explosives that had been lodged into them. And as this was happening, Israel declared a new phase of war as a second wave of electrical devices exploded across Lebanon. 20 people are said to have been killed and hundreds hurt when walkie-talkies blew up yesterday, including at the funeral of a child killed in the previous blast. It comes a day after the new tactic of exploding pagers rocked the Middle Eastern nation. And the working theory is that Israel... this was part of a plan down the line, and however they were going to enact it, maybe it was if fighting got to a certain level or something along those lines. But they got wind that Hezbollah were becoming suspicious of these devices, so decided to trigger them pretty indiscriminately as well. Of course, Hezbollah militants will have these on their person, but they could be around their children. The children might be inclined to play with them. So it was indiscriminate, even though it might appear in the face of it targeted. On Tuesday, hundreds of these pagers used by the Iran-backed militants blew up almost simultaneously in Lebanon and parts of Syria. This first round of explosives reportedly killed at least 12 people, including two children, and wounded nearly 3,000. Hezbollah blamed Israel for what seemed to be an elaborate remote strike, which also injured Iran's ambassador. And then the walkie-talkies exploded yesterday. Where would you say we rank in terms of the cost of diesel around Europe? Well, if we were the top, and that would bother you, cover your ears. Because Irish drivers will pay the most in Europe for diesel when planned carbon tax hikes are introduced next month. This is The Sun. Petrol will also be some of the most expensive fuels for Ireland. Fuels for Ireland has warned. The government is set to slap 2 cents on every 2 litres from October 1st, which will exacerbate the cost of living pain, the industry association said. According to the EU's weekly oil bulletin, Ireland's current diesel price is €1,667 per 1,000 litres, above the euro area average of €1,154 per 1,000 litres. So that's €500 more expensive in Ireland per 1,000 litres. But after the increase, Ireland's expected to surpass the most expensive country, which currently is Finland. And petrol prices are also still very, very high. I don't know why. Why do we have to be part of not why do we have to be part of a union, but why do we face some of the highest costs and we're told we're incredibly rich and all that kind of stuff? Why do we have to pay some of the highest costs in Europe? Why can't we, you know, be encouraged to switch from diesel or petrol, but not be absolutely hammered at the pumps every time? We'd love to be like our European neighbours in that regard. A lot of reaction yesterday to the news that free contraception was to be expanded to 16-year-olds, or at least that's what the health minister wants. And then we were having a conversation and it emerged that, and you know, maybe people hearing it for the first time, that contraception is given out to, there's no lower age, effectively. There is a system in place whereby if you can prove that you understand what sex is and you understand what the consequences of that are, then you are old enough to receive contraception. And I put it to the GP who works with Eyelash, I believe the organisation is, that says, well, is there a lower age? And it's not. There is no lower age. This is about a positive decision for the person. There's also, that's what the argument was made, there's also no onus on the young person, even if they were 13, there's no onus for their parents to be informed that they're now on long-term contraception. And also, if they don't divulge that maybe it's an 18, 19-year-old or even an older relative or whatever it might be that they're having sex with, there's no information given to An Garda Síochána. And a lot of people were taken by surprise by that. Padraig Tobin of AIM2, though, he believes expanding the free contraception scheme to women aged 16 would give a license to underage sex. I can't agree with him on this one because it's happening anyway, and I don't seriously think that because it's free, more people would do it. But anyway, that's his view. I respect it. As reported by the Irish Mirror, Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, well, it's reported everywhere, wants the programme extended as part of its Budget 25 allocation. However, there is some pushback in the Department of Health over the concerns that the age of consent is currently set at 17. Socially conservative Tobin said, "It's incredible to have to explain to Minister Stephen Donnelly sexual activity for children is dangerous." But do you believe, if you want to talk about that again, by making it free for 16-year-olds, does it encourage underage sex, in inverted commas, or in fact does it actually try and prevent any unwanted pregnancies for those that would already be engaging in that activity? The call is yours, whatever you think yourself. You'll know that the show this week has been brought to you in association with Breedon's House to Homebridge and Dunmanville, and we've another €200 voucher to give away today. They've been very generous with not one, not two, not three, not six, but five €200 vouchers to give away this week. Our penultimate voucher for €200 will go to the winner, who can rearrange these letters to make a word. Rhyme. Armier, okay, so we are looking for you to rearrange the letters A-R-M-I-O-R, A-R-M-I-O-R, rearrange those letters to create a household item that you might see yourself in. You might see at Breedon's House to Homebridge and Maville. You'll definitely see them there, by the way. If you know the answer, text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000 to be in with a chance to win. So, A-R-M-I-O-R. Rearrange those letters. What do you come up with? 086 60 25,000. Get involved with that. Right, okay. Roisin McGarvey is a spokesperson for Rural Development and Enterprise, Trade and Employment, and the Deputy Leader of the Green Party. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We're talking about overweight children, and you believe some of the reasons behind that, and maybe some stuff we can do to address that issue.
Yeah, I was asked at the Green Party thinking about school traffic congestion, and I raised the fact that the HSE had said that by the age of 9, a quarter of our children are overweight, and I was saying that we need to do more around having playgrounds and places for people or kids to play safely, and also that I felt that the parents were really concerned and had great fears about letting their kids having some independent travel on the school run because of lack of infrastructure around walking and cycling routes. Like basic things like more pedestrian crossings outside schools, wider footpaths, continuous footpaths, so they don't just disappear and fade away and then the kids have nowhere safe to walk. And that doesn't instill confidence in parents to trust that they could park their car and walk some of the way to school or let their kids walk all the way to school depending on where they live.
Yeah, because I think, you know, I mean, obviously some of it's infrastructure, but it's also parental attitudes in that, you know, a lot of us want to drop our kids off at the gate and pick them up at the gate. And it's interesting that this has come up now because in Letterkenny at the moment, there's quite a bit of work ongoing in and around some local schools, Deputy, whereby, as you've talked about, roads have been made one way, roads have been narrowed, footpaths have been widened, pedestrian crossings have been installed, and there's quite a bit of pushback. The public don't like it. Many of the public don't like it.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because we are a very car-based society. There is some good funding coming from Minister Eamon Ryan's office to try and see if we can get safer routes to school. That's the name of the project that he's funding. And I've seen it work here in Clare as well, where we have finally got some infrastructure outside schools, and it just means that cars can maybe feel the need to go all the way to the school gate, that they can drop them off further back from the school. So there isn't total traffic congestion and total chaos at school gates, because you find that's an issue outside every school, whether it's a big city school or a small rural school, that there's nowhere safe to drop the kids except at the school gate.
Mm-hmm. But also, even if the infrastructure is there, Roisin, I think people are getting more nervous or more cautious or whatever. It's very different for people who are 40 or 50 or 60 now. They'll know what their freedoms they had, and there was no helicopter parenting back then. But I think sometimes parents, even if the infrastructure there and is safe, they are reluctant, because they maybe perceive society to be unsafe, to allow the children that independence. I just wonder, you know, if we're trying to put the infrastructure in for a social mindset from generations ago.
Yeah, I think that, like, the fear factor the parents have, like, I've done loads of surveys on this with school parents' councils and everything, and the fear around their kids, you know, being abducted or, you know, getting into trouble on the way wasn't one of the fears that came up at all. It was more the safety concerns. So I do think that infrastructure can make a difference. And I've seen it work here firsthand, because often when schools get better infrastructure, they do initiate things like park and stride and walking buses, which work really well. And we've had lots of success with them in Clare.
Yeah, and we have to be conscious too as well of the fact that, you know, if you're overweight as a child, it can have impacts obviously on your health at that age, but also, you know, as you develop and as you grow older. So we have a responsibility, don't we, to ensure that every child has the best start possible. And if that means also, you know, not being particularly overweight, well, we have to do everything we can to address that issue.
Absolutely, and also good for their mental health as well. You know, we see the levels of anxiety among young people is far greater than it used to be before. And everybody knows once you go out for a walk or are physically active, it always gets you out of your head. So I think it's an important thing that we need to try and work on for our children's mental health as well as physical health. And I do see, like, I think parents were so used to dropping them to the school gate that, and probably basically mainly because of lack of infrastructure, that when the infrastructure does come, there's kind of a behavioural change that's needed there that needs a bit of work on and needs a bit of thought, because we're so used to getting them into the car, dropping them to the gate and dashing off to work that, like, parents are stuck in traffic, but often outside schools, they are the traffic. They're not just stuck in the traffic, they are the traffic. Whereas if all the parents made a commitment, and I've done this with schools where they park half a kilometre from the school, it means the children can walk the last half kilometre, maybe with some friends, and arrive in school fresh and ready and awake and alert, ready for learning.
Mm. What about spaces for children to play as well? You know, outdoor spaces. It's only last week we were discussing on this programme that in and around Donegal, say, for instance, there was calls from one parents from a skate park. You know, so if you don't play football, if you don't play hurley, if you don't play camogie or whatever it is, that, you know, there's alternative sports, other ways to get out and exercise and spark your interest. But where's the money for that? You know, like, say, for instance, the sugar tax. I presume part of that was motivated to try and discourage people to consume as much sugar as they do. A lot of those would be children, to reduce the obesity levels or the overweight levels. Where's that money gone? Could we not be ring-fencing that and investing it in, you know, different types of outdoor spaces that children can explore and have fun in?
Yeah, it's a very good point. I was saying in other interviews, it's a shame that, like, I mean, I managed to get a playground off the ground in my own village, but it took 12 of us, and it took a big campaign, and we had to draw funding from all different random places. I'm trying to, in this year's budget, to get a ring fence funding so that every village and every town has a playground, for example. And also, people don't know this, but Creature Forests are all open to the public. Yeah. So, like, children just love playing in forests.
I get where you're coming from with the playground. Love them, right? Fantastic stuff. But there's, like, an age group. There's 18 to 15 there. You know what I mean? And what's there for that age group?
Yeah, well, I mean, you get skate parks and you get youth playgrounds as well, you know, teenage playgrounds. We have a good one in Ennis. It's just for teenagers. Skate parks, again, should not be a big, huge campaign and really difficult to do. Like, local authorities have got funding for rural development and community development. Every local authority has community development workers. This is something I would like to see community developers,
so we both
development
would like
workers
to see it.
Driving.
We would both like to see it, but the advantage is you're a legislator. You're a member of a government party. So what is your party actually going to do in this regard then? Because, you know, I'm not saying you're... Not this is not against you, but we don't need ministers for observation either. We need ministers for action.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I put it in the budget submission looking for funding. There will be ring fence for outdoor spaces for kids and teenagers of all ages. Like, it is something that shouldn't be a big campaign. That's the point I'm making. We should make it easier for people. But there is actually existing funding through local authorities for community and rural development. But often it goes to other things, like maybe an astroturf, which is good, you know, or a walk or whatever. But I think it would be good to see, it would be good for community groups to know that the community development workers, you know, their job is to help them find funding for things. If there is a group that wants a skate park or a playground, they should get onto the community development worker and get them to help them get the funding.
Yeah. Okay.
There isn't a specific fund just for skate parks. I'm just saying, but there is lots of money there. The community development worker should be helping communities get for things that skateboard parks would fall under. But you're absolutely right. Like I've done this in the budget. Because there's funding for everything, it gets kind of spread out. People don't know what there's funding for. There's so many funds. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for ring fence funding just for playgrounds, just for skate parks, and actually also for community halls to have older active retirement groups as well on a weekly basis, because I think that's more important. I think when we ring fence funding, then people can apply for that particular fund for this particular goal, mm-hmm. as opposed to being a big palaver trying to find, like for our playground in Aina, we got funding from, I think, four different places to get it all together. You know, it's a lot of work for a voluntary group.
It is a handling. Yeah, okay, I get you.
Yeah.
All right, listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, Roisin. Take care. That's Roisin Garvey there, spokesperson for Rural Development and Enterprise, Trade and Employment with the Green Party. I want to take this opportunity to mention a couple of things here, talking about being active. Maybe you want to get out and about. Clochfin National School, Ballandrate Lifford, they have a 5K run walk. It takes place on Friday at 6:45, adults are 10, our children 5, family 2 plus 2, €20. And great spot prizes, I'm told, refreshments afterwards, donations welcome. There'll also be a raffle. So that's in aid of Clochfin National School. So if you want to get out and get some fresh air whilst the weather remains nice, it'll be nice and cool at this time, 6:45 Friday. And you can go along to that. And also to a memorial dance in memory of Eamon McDevitt of the Good and New Cancer Bus is being held on Friday night. It's in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny from 9 p.m. till midnight in aid of the Good and New Cancer Bus. Music by Evelyn and the Toosla Band. Spot prizes on the night. There you go. So we have the 9 to noon show. That's the 9 to noon dance this Friday from 9 in memory of Eamon McDevitt. Now, my heart sank just before 7 yesterday evening when I started getting contacts from people talking of a serious road traffic incident in the Clonmany area, and it became clear very shortly thereafter that a man had lost his life. Gardaí are now appealing for witnesses following that fatal road traffic collision near Clonmany last evening. It happened about 20 past 6 and it was a collision involving a van and a male pedestrian. As I say, it happened about 20 past 6 at Annagree on the R238. The pedestrian, aged in his 80s, was fatally injured. And I know there's intense shock in the local area as a result of this. The road's been closed for technical examination by Garda Forensic Collision Investigators, and it will remain closed overnight. Local diversions are in place. Gardaí are appealing for any witnesses to the collision to come forward. So anyone on the road who has camera footage or a dash cam and were travelling in the area in and around the time are asked to make this footage available to Gardaí. You can contact Buncranagh Garda Station locally on 93 20540. The Garda confidential line is always there for you as well, 1-800-666-1111. The Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen District is Councillor Jack Murray. Councillor, I'm sure we can join in offering our deepest condolences to this man's family, friends and the wider community. Incredibly, incredibly sad news.
Yeah, and look, just as you've outlined, as the news came in just before 7 o'clock, it was just a shadow over Inishowen yet again. And just people are shocked, saddened. This is an area being visited by many tragedies over the years, but it doesn't make it any easier. There's a family grieving, devastated. This morning, there's a community shattered. And look, everybody, and I know I can speak on behalf of all elected representatives in Inishowen, our thoughts are with the family and maybe keeping them in their prayers. And as always, the strong community of Inishowen will rally behind them, give them all the support that they need. But this is a horrendously difficult time, and we're all thinking them of this at this terrible thing.
Yeah, and indeed, unfortunately, the Inishowen community finds itself often now, it seems, you know, having to rally around in such tragic circumstances.
Yeah, look, this is a very strong, resilient community being visited by many, many tragedies. But I say it doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't in any way lessen the devastation that's been visited upon this family, this man's friends, and the wider community. And look, just everybody's numb and shocked this morning. I just think, not again. But unfortunately, it has. I think it's the 15th found holiday in Donegal already in 2024. Look, it's 15 families devastated. It's just a horrendously, horrendously difficult time. Just the worst news to get on a Wednesday evening.
Okay, Councillor Jack Morica here, look, of the Inishowen District. Thank you very much for that. And, you know, we endeavour as much as we can, and I know it can sound like a tired message, just to emphasise the importance of us all being as just as careful as we possibly can in this shared space that we have to use these roads. And it's not in any way to talk of what may or may not have caused the fatal collision yesterday, because I simply don't know, and I'm not attributing any blame or responsibility to any parties involved. But that's what we try and do all the time, is get that message across and try and avoid these awful, tragic situations. So I know sometimes maybe if we reiterate it, it can feel like, you know, oh, here we go again. But it's for this very reason, to try and just prevent awful tragedies like this. So our thoughts and prayers, and as I say, by the way, that commentary is general and not relating to this incident at all, as I have zero knowledge of the circumstances surrounding it other than what's being revealed by the Gardaí. But primarily this morning, our thoughts and prayers are with the gentleman who's passed, and also his family, his friends, and his wider community, because these things, the impact is felt far and wide. Okay. Councillor Patrick McGowan is with us now. Councillor McGowan, good morning to you. And I suppose actually we'll not flip from one to the other. You're obviously in this Stranorlar area, but we're all part of the one county. And, you know, when any of us hear this devastating news or wake up to this news, however it might be, we're all touched by it. You don't have to be on the peninsula, do you, to sort of be, you know, feel the loss and to extend sympathy, Patrick?
Absolutely not. It just brings home to us, you know, how certain things are. You leave the house in the morning, you just don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the day. And obviously, as you say, we're not identifying any one incident here, but we'll just be asking for everybody just to be mindful, you know, both pedestrians and drivers in the road. Like, we're not putting blame or nothing like that. This is a very, very, very sad time for that man's family, and I offer my condolences, as everybody would, and particularly in Donegal. It's just, you know, we just have to be just that wee bit more careful, just and everything we do in life, just to be a bit more careful, just, and just condolences, as I say, to the that man's family. Yeah,
indeed. And we invited you on to tease out the remarks you've been making as it relates to Ballybuffet Garda Station. It's not, you know, one of the 24/7s. You believe it should be open more. Tell me why.
Well, first of all, I think it should be open when it's supposed to be open, during the daytime. I understand that the way the policing is working now, that Blair Kennedy is a 24/7 one. The problem now with Ballybuffet, it's not open when it's supposed to be open. When you call there, the door's closed. And if it's the case that you reported, say, an incident, I had a cause last week there, there was an accident in the middle of the town. I could see no Gardaí presence, so around the Gardaí myself, and obviously around Ballybuffet, and straight away through to Letterkenny, I tried to explain that the town was coming to a complete standstill. I actually seen the patrol car stuck in the traffic jam in Stranorlar, and tried to explain to the Gardaí in Letterkenny that they'll need to get out of the patrol car, walk to Ballybuffet, and walk back to the place corner to divert the traffic. But this is all the time, and people are ringing for different reasons. Now, one example was given, which is an occurrence that happens a few times. One of the councillors mentioned about passports. You go in and you're lucky enough to get a Gardaí to sign the passport, but when the passport office rings, then the station's closed and they just hang up. And then one of my colleagues, Martin Harley, said that even though the family had they lost their holiday over the head of it.
Yeah, oh, so, just like, in relation to that, and this doesn't mean it's right, but if anyone's getting a passport signed, please go to a 24/7 station, because and that doesn't talk to your wider point, Councillor. Sorry, you know what I mean, but it's just I've been contacting this myself, yeah. And it is an actual pain.
I think at now and day and age that they have to ring. I can't see why they can't do it by email and stuff like that, because the email is accepted by everybody now as a legitimate way of communicating, and it's probably more. You're probably more sure than you are of lifting the phone to somebody. But anyway, look, it is ridiculous. Everybody now knows they've got to go to Letterkenny to get
so
a passport.
Just in relation to that, So say I would compare, the scenario seems the same or very similar. So say Ballybuffet Garda Station, and it's a satellite of Letterkenny. That's how it feels, right? But then you have Donegal Town, which is kind of the similar distance from Ballyshannon. You don't get this impression with Donegal Town. It feels like it's open all of the time. It feels you can go in at any time. There's always something happening around it. So is a decision made that we're going to police the Donegal Town station like that? This is the best example I can come up with. And we're not going to sort of have the same sort of a presence in the Ballybuffet station. Like, it can't be happening by accident. Someone has to be deciding this, I presume.
Yeah, look, I've been down with chief supers over many years, and we discussed this, and we had inspectors there, we had supers there, we had sergeants there, and every one of them straight away said Ballybuffet Garda Station was one of the busiest in the county, way the amount of, and since they control a big area. See, the patrol cars goes out, they'd be down at St. George's and Kerrigan's Castle Finn convoy. This is the populated area of the county, and remember, this is a national primary road along the border and everything. So, but what you do find is, not only is the Garda Station closed, say if they're out in patrol, that means there's nobody else, because in fact they're not even answering the phone. So, like, is there only one patrol car or one that can go out? Are they all out at the one time? They can't leave nobody in the station. And like Donegal Town, it should be open when it's supposed to be open. We can argue for 24/7, which we could. And you must bear in mind that Ballybuffet and Stranraer are the only town, you know, large town in the county that's on the National Primary Road. Mm-hmm. Letterkenny's not in the National. Donegal Town, Killybegs, none of them are national. But we are the main thoroughfare through that county. That's it. And there's not a Garda station on the National Primary Road as such. Like, and at least you would think, and bearing in mind what they have said themselves, it should be open. And if it is the case that there's one, two, three patrols, whatever, going out, there still should be somebody in the Garda station, even a lay person, to answer phones or
something. The truth is, as well, we often talk about it from, you know, law-abiding citizens' perspective. But if the truth be told, criminals are very clever. It's their job. And they know where, they know what's what. I mean, I don't think it's too far from the front of that Garda station last weekend, where six or seven individuals, young people, were knocking the living daylights out of another person in the street. Yeah. Is that kind of behaviour happening because people don't feel there's any guards locally that will be able to intervene?
Well, look, thank God, and particularly in Ballybuffet and Stranraer, of all the large towns, probably have less crime and criminals and stuff like that. They are isolated incidents, and I must say that's first and foremost. That's very, very important. The other thing that this is a question I have at the MD meeting this week as well was about CCTV. We're waiting now 8 years since Ballybuffet and Stranraer were approved, along with an extension to Letterkenny.
It is crazy that you're more likely to see an incident on the main street there on Snapchat than you are on CCTV. Yeah.
Correct, and like we've gone through three meetings of the Joint Policing Committee, it's been approved. Now we've got a thing this week to say now that it's eventually starting to move ahead, but this is about the fifth or sixth time, both the extension to Letterkenny and the new CCTV for Ballybuffet. But the issue is, when we were told that they would be less opening hours, or the Garda stations would be kind of closed, or there wouldn't be as many in them. Say, Castle Finn Convoy, Raffold, Sergeant Raffold moved to Letterkenny many years ago. Bracco's closed down. But we were told we'd see more patrol cars. We are not seeing more patrol cars. They never, ever see patrols up around Mean Rea, Castle Finn, the Alt, up around Trusk, people again. This is where they should be. The criminals won't know when a patrol car would appear. So it's not that we have lost in one hand and gained in another. We haven't. There's less patrols.
It is an interesting comment, because we were sold, as you've quite rightly said, I'm only reiterating what you said, we were sold this model in the belief that cars would be, there'd be more saturation of policing outside of the stations. But where are these cars? Where are they? You don't see them.
No, they don't, and the fact that they have to keep closed, they have to empty the Garda station, not just close it. It's not that one or two guards have to leave, they have to completely close it down, that they can't even answer a phone. So there's no presence there whatsoever, lay person or otherwise. They have to close it down if there's an incident. And we have a big area to cover from Barnes Gap up around Clohan, Funtown or whatever, down to Carrigan. It's too big an area. It's the main entrance into the county, the M15. You have three national primary roads. It's on a national primary road. Mm. And certainly, I've asked our MD, this isn't the first time I raised it. It's on the minutes of the last meeting. way back in July, and I'll keep asking until we get a face-to-face meeting. Like, and we just need to tell us when it's going to be open, and then at least open with us and ask about the patrols, and obviously an update on the CCTV.
Yeah, Charles points out that Letterkenny has three main primary routes, the N13, N14, and N56, but I think you're talking about routes that actually go through. You're talking about routes that actually go through.
Letterkenny's bypass many years ago, Donegal Town. The only national primary now in a town of any size is Balbuffet. So, like, the only traffic in the centre of Letterkenny, Donegal Town, Buncrana, is traffic that are actually in and out. Maybe not Buncrana, but, like, Balbuffet is getting all the lorries.
And there are other examples, Dunkin' Fan and what have you. But you're on about main thoroughfares.
Yeah, the main towns where you would expect to have a presence of this type.
And
it would be open, it was supposed to be open, just.
Kate on Facebook says the place is wide open for criminals, and now with the influx if you look at the statistics, Kate, it doesn't really look like you're portraying it, but that's your view and I respect it. Councillor Patrick McGowan there. There's an interesting programme on RTE tonight, apparently. When I say interesting, I'm probably not going to watch it, if the truth be told, but perhaps I should. It's after the 9 o'clock news. It's infiltrating, anti-immigration protests. It's going to be interesting to see what's in it. There might be quite a bit of a backlash to that, but just to mark your card, if that's something you're interested in, apparently they've been working on it for months and months and months. Greg says, listener, it's a simple one. We really need a massive road safety campaign in Donegal. Indeed, and we try, though, and there's adverts and there's stuff in the papers and the stuff on social media. It's just, I suppose, getting the penny to drop to get the information to land, if you know what I mean, with the people that need to hear it. I'll be back with more comments from you and the weather forecast after these messages. The Ombudsman, Ger Deering, joins us on the programme now. Ger, thanks so much for your time. Nice to speak to you again.
Good morning, Greg. Good to talk to you.
You're highlighting the fact that over 30 people under the age of 65 are being placed in nursing homes. This every month. And it's being attributed to a funding crisis in disability services. So talk to me a little bit more about this issue.
Yeah. The issue is, Greg, that sometimes hospitals and places like that where they need to discharge a patient or step down a patient, they will, irrespective of their age, the only option available may well be a nursing home. Now, for a huge amount of people, that's appropriate and it works very well. And this is not a reflection on nursing homes. But for people in their 20s and 30s and, under 65 generally, this is not the most suitable place for them to be. They have a requirement for a range of other services. But more than that, these people are people who should be living their fullest potential and their full lives. And they can't do that in a nursing home. If you can picture a situation where you go out socially or you go to work or whatever, wherever you go, and then you're saying to your friends, I can't bring you back for a cup of tea because I'm going back to my nursing home room. This is the reality of what some people are living with. Now, I'm delighted to say that following our report, the HSE took on this issue and have worked quite hard, to be fair, to move a number of people. So they've had some success with 81 people, and that's 81 individuals who now are in more appropriate homes and settings with support around them. They have another 17 people, as I understand it, almost ready to move. But the problem is then, once those people move, the budget would appear to have run out. And given all of the work that has gone into this since 2021, it's just not acceptable now. There are other reasons why it was delayed through COVID and reasons like that.
Of course, and there's a million reasons why something can happen, but it shouldn't happen either. We highlighted a case not so long ago of a gentleman who was in Letterkenny University Hospital for weeks. And the result was to try and get him out of that environment, and he was well capable of not being in it. Was the victory almost at that time was that he got a space in a nursing home. So in some cases, it's seen as the solution. But people should not have to endure that process, even if eventually it means then they do get appropriate accommodation outside of the nursing home. We should have a system in place, and we surely shouldn't be talking about budget restraints when we are constantly being told by the leaders of this country that we're incredibly rich.
Well, yes, I launched this report yesterday and called on for the increased funding at a time when, in fact, the Oireachtas was speaking about how to spend the billions in windfall tax. So you can measure a society by the way we look after our most vulnerable. And the people that we're talking about here are quite vulnerable. And all they're asking for is a fair and reasonable opportunity to live their own lives. In some instances, accommodation may well be available, but it needs to be adopted, or the person has particular requirements around a support package maybe, or help that they need. And, you know, there has to be a person-centred approach to this. And there has been. And again, I commend the HSE for the work they have done in progressing the project so far. But I just think it is unacceptable at this stage that we now find that it is going to be stymied in some way because of funding. And one of the starkest lines in the report for me that I received from the HSE is where they're now having to, as they call it, manage the expectations of the people who had been given a glimmer of hope, would say that they might be moving. So I think the government needs to look at this and see that there is sufficient funding provided to ensure that people can live their lives to their full potential.
Yeah, but we're talking, if I'm not mistaken, I hope I'm not misreading the figures, this is a shortfall of €5 million. Now, in the wider scale of the health spend, this is pittance. This sounds more to me like a management issue. We seem to be very reactive. It seems that nursing homes now have become part of the process.
Well, it's 5 million people, that's correct, Greg, but that's for the next batch of 20 people. But there are 1,200 people to follow. Mm. So what we actually need here is proper funding provided on a yearly, year-by-year basis. You know, certainly the 5 million is needed to ensure that the next batch of people who are ready to move, but will take considerably more than that in the long term. But at the same time, in the context of the overall budgeting process and in the context of what it would mean to the individuals, we've seen the stories and heard the stories of the people who have moved out and how they can now. In fact, there was an article this week in one of the national newspapers where the person themselves described it as like getting out of prison.
Well, of course, you've got an acquired brain injury, for an example, you will get great care in our nursing homes, don't get me wrong. Yes, but that's not the care that you need at that time. You need rehabilitation, you need other resources and supports. Gerry, listen, as always, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. That's the Ombudsman, Gerry Deering there. 30 people under 65 going into nursing homes every single month. So whilst the HSE seems to have made some inroads, clearly much more needs to be done, hence the attention from the Ombudsman's Office. All right, rejoin us. Well, don't go anywhere, actually, because we've got the news and obituary notices. Stay where you are. We'll be back shortly.